Welcome to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's queer media, and what an exciting couple of days it has been. Now, we have been looking at LGBT issues over the last few years from all over the world, and really looking at Canada as a real focal point of our attention. But that focal point has been shifted in the last couple of days, of course, to the United States election over the last week or so. A lot of people have been talking about that. But guess what, folks? We're not going to talk about that today. That is not what this show is about, even though there's certainly plenty there to talk about. What we're going to talk about is something a bit more closer to home. We're going to be talking about politics here in Canada. Now, I know some folks are probably tapped out on politics talk, but give us a chance here. We interviewed half of all of the openly gay and lesbian MPs that Canada has to offer, which sadly is a grand total of three. We are hoping in the course of the conversation that we have that you'll get a bit of an understanding of maybe why that number is so low. First and foremost, we spoke with NDP MP Sherry Benson, and I'll jump right into that interview now, and I think we explained the topic quite well in this conversation.
Having me here with MP Sherry Benson, and what a beautiful building.
I know.
First time I've been in here, and it is just astounding to see. Now, you are one of less than just over a handful of openly LGBT MPs.
Yeah.
You know, how did that come about? How did you get into the MP game, as it were?
Yeah, that's a good question. And probably like lots of people, there's an issue in your community. For me, it was around housing and homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved in the issue as a community member in my job. And, you know, after sort of 10 years of the previous government, I sort of felt like, you know, we can't go as far as we want to go as long as we have that particular party in the federal government. And the federal government is just not going to be a partner with us.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, you think, well, you know, maybe I should put my money where my mouth is and throw my hat in the ring. And so the other thing that people might not know is that in Saskatchewan, we had these very odd federal government ridings that were sort of little slivers of an urban area,
mm-hmm.
and then sort of like an inverted triangle, then these huge sort of rural.
Oh, wow.
So the nothing against rural or urban, but the issues are very different.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when we finally got an urban-only riding, and the riding I represent is Saskatoon West, then we have issues in common as an urban mm-hmm. community. That made it seem more, I was going to say of interest, but that's not really what I mean. It seemed to me you could be a good MP to represent issues that people held in common because we live together in sort of an urban area. Yeah. So for those two...
More unifying elements.
Yeah, there. Yeah. And somebody asked me.
And I think
I didn't wake up and decide to walk
in the bath one day and go, you know what, I'm gonna
be an MP. And I know it does, you know, we sort of joke about that, but there's so many things in life. If someone doesn't put it in front of you, if you've, you know, if you haven't had a parent or an adult in your life that was in political mm-hmm. life that you sort of envisioned or saw yourself as a politician, which is why it's important for lesbian and gay MPs to be out, so people can see themselves.
Absolutely.
So if you've never had that in your life, then you really do I think you need someone to say, hey, what do you think about this? Have you ever thought of it? And someone did that, and I thought about it.
I think that dovetails very nicely into, because you talk about, you know, the urban only constituency, and I think that there's this very much an understanding that GLBD folks migrate to urban centres, so there's much higher concentrations there. But what's interesting when you look at the electoral map of Britain and Canada, when during the election in 2015, there were rural openly gay candidates in Britain, whereas there were almost none at all in Canada. So there was 26% of all constituencies had an openly gay candidate, whereas only 6% in Canada, with the nearly all of them being in urban centres. You know, do you think that's perhaps something that is holding Canada back? Perhaps people aren't thinking that an openly gay person could win in a rural area.
For sure. Like, I think when we talk, and I don't have anything to back this up except for the comment you've just made from, you know, what we've seen in other countries.
For sure.
But often it's not the electorate that's holding women candidates back, openly gay candidates back, Indigenous candidates back. In other words, if you have a diversity of people running in candidacies, they more often than not will get elected. So it is some of the institutions, I think, political parties that are assuming, making some assumptions about who can win where. And I think, you know, the one thing about, you know, particularly coming from a province like Saskatchewan, where there's only 1 million people. So people's ability to have a community around them of other gay and lesbian people, you know, you sort of have to kind of gravitate the urban areas. It's just there's not a lot of people, and a lot of services have to be concentrated where there's some economy of scale and all those kinds of things. But I think, you know, I think you're right. I think we make a lot of assumptions, and it's not necessarily the voters. There are lots of other institutions involved in politics, governments, political parties, and if those institutions are no different than any other institutions, they're sexist, they're homophobic, they have those histories. It's disappointing this you know, this time around to have less openly gay and lesbian, members of parliament. That's something that my colleagues and I, certainly Randall Garrison and I, that my fellow MP from Vancouver Island, I say that because I have a hard time pronouncing his writing. I should practice. Squamish, Saanich, Sook. Sook. have talked about, and we are starting to talk now about approaching people to consider running in the next election.
Absolutely.
And finding a way to support, maybe do a better job of supporting people that are, you know, brand new to politics, was, and he was one day.
In all fairness to the NDP, you folks, or the NDP, ran more openly gay candidates as a percentage than the other parties. Unfortunately, the red wave, as they called it, obliterated a lot of those candidates. And I think that there were so many reasons for why that happened outside of
absolutely. Outside of the candidate sometimes.
Absolutely. And I mean, some of those things just could not be helped. But I think you're absolutely right. There needs to be more of a push for candidates to be put forward. And I think that's a success that we've been seeing in other countries, and that's why the trend has been going up. Which brings me to the anomaly of where Canada was there, and it was improving, and then 24-6 is a heck of a drop. And it happened during the Stephen Harper Conservative era, which raises this idea of, which has been kind of bandied about, of an electoral closet, the idea that you know, that if you're an MP, you can't be out. Now, this could be something that's more unique to maybe the Conservative Party. Unfortunately, I don't know any out Conservative MPs to ask the question.
Right.
But, you know, do you get a sense, working in the, you know, on the hill, that there is kind of this feeling that you can't be out in politics?
Yes, you know, it's a good question to ask a brand new member of parliament, right? So as you walk in the door, mm-hmm. sort of what is that feeling? And it's a very, quite a homogeneous group in parliament. So, yes. You know, you walk in as an Indigenous person, you walk in as a woman. I mean, we're not doing very well there as yeah. well. You walk in there as a lesbian, like you just, there's not, you sort of see how far we need to go.
Yeah.
And so I think it's still a very, it's still an institution mm-hmm. that needs to be changed in order to be a welcoming place for diversity. And when I say that, I mean a place that understands that in order to be a true democracy, you have to be, you have to look, you have to be representative of the population.
Absolutely.
And it's not right now.
Yeah.
So you don't want to sort of, you know, I mean, the world is still a sexist, racist, homophobic place. You
yeah.
don't want to make any kind of assumptions on individuals mm-hmm. about their choices. Or to blame individuals for not coming forward or that kind of thing, because then you're just pretending that, you know, the there's nothing more to do, everything's okay, what, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not, you know, I don't think it's got a long way to go. So I can understand people wanting to figure out if it's a safe place to be who they are.
Yeah.
And I think what I heard on the campaign trail, which was the best, and I don't know why I didn't think about that, but you know, young people coming up to you and saying, "Oh, it's so cool, having a lesbian MP from Saskatoon," right? Like there's some, you know, we're kind of out in the boonies. There's a lot of
yeah.
assumptions about Saskatchewan, about its mm-hmm. conservatism. That isn't really true if you kind of look below.
Sure, yeah.
So I thought, whoa, yeah, you know, that kind of underlines why it's important to be who you are, because people are coming behind you. And if you really are going to make change, then part of that is making sure people know that you are who you are here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, yourselves and the other six are doing a fantastic job at that. Which brings me to the Canadian Centre for Gender and Sexual Diversity. Nailed it.
You said that.
And their day when they sent you know, students to the Hill to kind of meet and greet. And, you know, how important is it to be seen out in the community as being out? We've had a lot of major Hollywood actors now saying, just this past week, saying, you know, I wish I'd come out sooner,
yeah.
wish I'd been able to provide that kind of leadership, that example sooner. So to you, how important is it that you are out to folks and to youth?
Well, I think it's really important because, like, not all of us have had the privilege of growing up in a household where we saw someone in politics. I mean, there's only 336 of us here. And, do you know what I mean? So the
yeah.
chances are, so if you are a young person who really has the potential to and the interest to be in politics, then, you know, where are you going to sort of see that? And then if you're a gay kid and you're thinking, you know, I don't, you know, is this possible for me or whatever? So, you know, it's such a small thing for a member of parliament to do, to invite young people to be with them, us for a day, to answer their questions. But I think, you know, if you sort of twig that in someone, gee, you know, that's a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, sure, he's a lesbian, you know. Yeah, she did it. Or, you know, she didn't look, you know, or... maybe I could do it. Or then they actually have someone
mm-hmm.
who they've met yeah. right? And they can reach out. And that's sort of what we said to them at the end. Like, this isn't, you know, it's not keep in touch.
Yeah.
You know, we're just regular people. Give us a call.
For sure.
And I think the kids, particularly here in Ottawa, mm-hmm. have a real opportunity to sort of make that connection. And I do think that, you know, I say this, and then sometimes I think, well, that doesn't sound very good, Sherry. Because it sounds like I'm just hanging out here doing nothing. But in some ways I say, you know, I'm keeping this seat warm for the next generation. So I need to keep it moving. But I'm passing it on to someone at
Absolutely,
some point.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I like to say that to young people. You need to think that they're... You know,
4 years down the road.
That's right. Where are you going to be?
Well, three at this point.
Yeah, where are you going to be? Where are you going to be in 12 years? Where are you going to be in 8 years? Where that kind of stuff. So people mm-hmm. are kind of thinking about it. And I like to let people know that, you know, it's not, there's no magic. You're not born that, you know, born this way. I was going to say, you're not born a politician. You're not born a politician was what I meant to say.
Yeah.
But it's true, right? Like some people say, oh, you always wanted to be a politician or you've grown up that way. Everyone has their own, like, lens on mm-hmm. how something happens for someone. And I just like to let people know there's lots of different ways to
Absolutely.
Wind up being a politician.
I think it's interesting you said, because I went to undergrad at Carleton, which is essentially it's just a breeding ground for civil servants. Like that's what it is.
That's what it's like.
I mean, this close to Parliament Hill.
Yeah, how could it not?
The party political influence is very much felt there.
Interesting.
Yeah,
so I guess that makes sense.
The political parties, like the microcosms on campus, are quite. So you see these students who are career politicians from the age of 18. Like, that's just the way they go. And I find it fascinating to see what would be the next couple of generations. And many of them I know are openly gay. And I'm thinking, you know, it'd be such a shame if that's blocked or stopped.
The political parties themselves.
Absolutely.
And I do think there is a lot, and some reason that some people, when we start talking about the voting age, I just find there's a lot of, you know, in high school, a lot of interest, and you're starting mm-hmm. to get political, and you're starting to sort of be leaders, and then you have this kind of sort of long wait until you're 18 to vote and that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's... It would be sort of interesting here where that influence would be
probably its strongest.
I think so. And you'd have more people thinking about politics as a career. I do tell people if you told me that I would be here sitting with you talking about being a member of parliament back in the summer of June of 2014, I would have said you were insane.
I would believe that. Unfortunately, I've been doing this a while now, so if you didn't ask me if I'd be interviewing an MP, I'm like, I can see it happen. But, you know, it's, any parting words of wisdom, if you were to, if there's any youth listening, or anyone who thinks that, you know, perhaps life as an MP might not be available to them because of their gender or sexuality, what would you say to encourage them that this is an opportunity?
Well, I think I'd say that, do what you're passionate about, find out what that is, mm-hmm. and if being a member of parliament will be able to sort of make that something happen, to make the world a better place or whatever, go for it. Mm-hmm. And then the other piece of advice is that it's not to sort of think about you have to do it alone or, you know, we have a lot of these views of, like, the president. It's a bit very American, kind of rugged individualist, you know. They're sort of leading. They know everything. They're in charge of everything.
They're billionaires.
That's right, billionaires. But to know to sort of reach out, and there's different kinds of leadership, mm-hmm. and to give it a try. Know who you are. I think that's the most important thing when you're sort of deciding to be a leader, is kind of know who you are and what you mm-hmm. want to do, and then go for it and reach out to other leaders. I think we have an obligation. So yeah.
And there are leaders in every town and city and village and so on and so forth. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me, and I'm very much looking forward to see what happens under your tutelage here in Capitol Hill.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
So, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with me. As we came in, I could get a sense of how incredibly busy you are. You must be rushed off your feet.
Well, it's certainly a lot of fun to be a member of Parliament in this Justin Trudeau government. It's a very busy government. There's lots that we're achieving and accomplishing. Mm-hmm. And on this anniversary of 1 year in government, still lots of work. There's more work ahead of us than there is mm-hmm. behind us. And so they certainly are full days, but they're fun days.
Now, I was speaking with Sherry Benson. We talked briefly about the culture on the Hill. And why perhaps there aren't as many openly gay MPs. Now, I know that under this particular government, there's been a lot of rapid changes. And I think we discussed just briefly a second ago some of the highlights, like the having the flag on the Hill. Mm-hmm. Although I think it was like on a temporary podium. But still, the symbolism, how important was it to have the Pride flag on the Hill?
It was June 1st, and it was the first day of Pride Month. And so it was a really important milestone for us to achieve. I mean, if you can understand that every square inch of Parliament Hill is regulated by 3 to 5 different agencies and keepers of keys. And so it was very important. And the Prime Minister didn't even miss a beat when we approached him and said, if we can get a flagpole, if we can do it, mm-hmm. will you come? And he's like, I'll be there. You let me know when and where. And it was very important. I mean, in less than a day and a half notice, we had over 350, 400 people on the Hill. We had international visitors leave there. Tour groups and come and take photos with us.
Oh, wow.
They would say, you know, Canada, please help the Middle East. Canada, please help China. Canada, please help, you know, different countries in the world. Mm-hmm. So important symbolic move, but also a substantive move. You've seen the Prime Minister march in 3 Pride parades. I know I marched in a number of Pride parades, and it's important that we, you know, take a look as a party, having decriminalized homosexuality in the late 60s to passing same-sex marriage in the early 2000s to now C-16. Mm-hmm. It's important that we continue to make legislative changes that protect those who are the most vulnerable in our society, and that we really approach this from a human rights perspective, and that's what we're doing as a government. There's, you know, we have some gains, we have some victories, and there's still more work to do.
Now, when this is being broadcast, so for folks listening, I believe that C-16 is going to be in the Standing Committee on Justice and Human Rights, and the clause by clause. Like, it's gone straight through as quick as is parliamentarily possible. That's a bit of a tongue twister. which really, I think, demonstrates the devotion to this. I mean, we know that the NDP have been advocating for this for a long time, but the speed and the dedication of the dialogue held by the Justice Minister this time round with trans activists is something that we've seen applauded by trans activists all over the country, which is certainly something that has to be recognised and mentioned, I think, up front, is that you folks are doing a fantastic job with this bill, and I think the community is very, very thankful for that. And I think it shows, and I think what you mentioned just now really shows a cultural shift. We were talking earlier about how at the last election, only one Conservative candidate was openly gay in Toronto. I want to say Toronto Danforth was the riding, or around there. Unfortunately, they lost, or fortunately, depending on which team you're on. But the NDP and the Liberal Party fielded a lot more openly gay candidates. Do you feel that the Liberal Party is keen on promoting more, or not promoting, but encouraging more openly gay people to run as candidates?
Absolutely. I think that if you take a look at the signals right from the Prime Minister through our whole party, it's a very LGBTQ positive caucus. It's our policies are positive. I mean, in my case, the party didn't come and recruit me. I was frustrated with the previous government. I wanted to get Edmonton back on the map. There were some things that I wanted to see changed. And I realized that Edmonton was a progressive city that I just wanted to show the rest of the country how much we changed, mm-hmm. that Alberta is more than Moose Mountain and Mounties, and that we have a progressive core to our province. I mean, if you take a look at, there's four LGBTQ MLAs, including an LGBTQ mm-hmm. minister in the government of Alberta right now,
oh,
Ricardo Miranda, Minister of Culture and Tourism, and three LGBTQ MLAs in the NDP caucus. And so that shows you the diversity that's in Alberta. That wasn't translating to the mm-hmm. national scene. And so as an openly gay businessman and community activist for, you know, 15, 20 years, I just said it was time to see if people would send, you know, that kind of a person, that kind of a voice sure. to Ottawa. And so I think wherever LGBTQ, two-spirited, you know, intersex, queer activists and community leaders are, we want, and I want, and our caucus wants people to see them reflected in our mm-hmm. party and in the people who we hire to be in our offices, to be in the government. Because I think it's when people of diversity of all stripes see themselves yeah. in the government that it says to them at a very young age, I can do that too. And so that's why we did Rainbow Day on the Hill recently, where myself, Seamus O'Regan, Rob Oliphant, Minister Bryson, Scott Bryson, Sherry Benson, and Randall Garrison, all of the openly LGBTQ members of the NDP party and the Liberals, welcomed openly gay, trans, or queer youth mm-hmm. to the Hill to shadow us for a morning or a day, just so that they could see how government works. And they shadowed us. They came to committee. In our case, they had the president of the CBC presenting at Heritage Committee.
Oh, cool.
And then they came to lunch and met the president of a bank and got to, you know, go to each station in my office to see how it works. And the message was, this isn't so foreign. It isn't mm-hmm. so far away. I mean, even if you're an Ottawa student, you can sometimes feel that the federal government feels far away, even Absolutely. Though the buildings are here. So how does somebody in rural Alberta feel? How does somebody in rural Nova Scotia or Newfoundland feel, or even in one of our cities? So mm-hmm. that's why diversity of all stripes, of all parts of the rainbow, matter to us. I mean, look, we have four Sikh cabinet ministers.
Which is right? incredible.
We have a yeah. Minister of Persons with Disabilities, who's an Olympic, Paralympic athlete. We have Minister Hare, who had his own, you know, journey mm-hmm. through struggles and is now the Minister of Veterans Affairs. And so our government is very committed to demonstrate that diversity isn't a check mark on a list, that it's how our country is built. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to see reflected in our government and in the people who Canadians elect to serve them in Parliament.
Absolutely. Do you think that Canadians would elect openly gay MPs in rural ridings? I know that in the UK, 23% of all constituencies had an openly gay candidate, whereas in 2015, only 6% of Canadian constituencies had an openly gay candidate. And they were nearly all in urban areas. So the question is, you know, is it perhaps that these people, these folks aren't coming forward? Or is it perhaps some apprehension that they won't get elected? It's a difficult conundrum on, you know, in the rural areas. How do we approach that?
I think we put too much emphasis on the rural-urban divide in the country, mm-hmm. and Canadian values are shared regardless of where you live. And values of not just tolerance but acceptance and diversity are shared in rural Alberta. They're shared in rural Nova Scotia. They're shared in the north. Mm-hmm. They're shared. I mean, if you think about it, we have prejudice in all pockets of the country.
Absolutely.
And we have tolerance acceptance in all parts. Mm-hmm. I mean, all you have to do is look how many times Minister Bryson's been elected from King's Hats. Mm-hmm. That's a rural riding. And I mean, when the media tried to come to, when they came to Minister Bryson's wedding, he and Max's wedding, and they thought they'd found that rural person who was going to give them the quote they wanted, and they said, what do you think of, you know, MP Bryson, you know, marrying his same-sex partner? And the quote from the person who lives up the street from Minister Bryson was, well, it's no big deal, it's just two guys getting married. There you go, right?
Absolutely.
And so I think what Canadians want to know is, are you going to work hard? Mm-hmm. Are you going to represent me? Are you going to do your best for us and for the country? And are you going to be present? Are you going to keep coming back to where you're from? And that's mm-hmm. the litmus test that I certainly know that I want to be evaluated by. And it was funny because at one point, it was funny because people after the election said, "What? You're gay? We didn't know that." And other people were like, "How could you not?" So it was never even an issue. It's not an issue that came up in the election. And some people were like, "We're so proud of you. We didn't know that part of you. And now we're even more proud of you." Mm-hmm. And so it's all about how you represent the people who send you to Ottawa. And as the Prime Minister said, and I will keep repeating, the people of Edmonton Centre are my first bosses. And absolutely, the Prime Minister is my second boss. And so that applies to anybody who wants to seek public life. As long as you know who the people are who send you to your legislature or your city council or your town hall, or in this case, the Parliament of Canada, as long as you stay connected and faithful to those people, then you will be doing what they sent you to Ottawa or wherever it is to do.
That's a fantastic point. Absolutely. I think one thing you mentioned, I grew up in the UK. I'm a new Canadian. And one of the things that is most striking to me is the public and private life divide in Canada compared to the UK. In UK, everybody knows all of the openly gay MPs, and an MP's personal life is much more public than it is here in Canada. Which I think in the previous government, we could see that more obvious. I went to a public service pride event here in Ottawa, and I saw somebody across the room, and I'm like, "Do I know that person?" And I'm trying to figure out who this person is. And then somebody whispers in my ear that it's a member of government. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, that's how I recognize them." But of course, that would never be acknowledged in media who that individual was, because they weren't publicly out. Which really raises the question, is it the fact that perhaps folks feel that as a parliamentarian, your private life is private, or that there is a culture of that you don't want to be out in Parliament? Because we know that there have been some MPs who have been closeted.
I think it's a deeply personal issue, and I think there may be some issues of party philosophy that play into this. If they're, you know, is anybody closeted in the Liberal caucus, they should know, and I think they would know that they would be openly welcomed, and so there's nobody that, you know, that I would think is closeted in the Liberal caucus. And I think it really depends what, you know, people's own journey are. And, you know, we have our own orientation, and then we have to self-identify, and then you decide if you want to share that with the public or not. In my case, I came out at 28, and it was a long journey because I first realized at 21. So I fought myself for about 7 years. And I can tell you, 25% of my brain power trying to fight who I was, when I got that brain power back, it was like a new lease on life. And so, you know, if there is anybody who's thinking about it, my encouragement to them is if they can make it work, it does get better. And part of getting better is being authentic. And I think that's one of the things that I learned through the campaign is people just want you to be real. And they want you to be who you're meant to be. And that's why the C-16 legislation is so important, because we're empowering transgender people to be who they're meant to be in the eyes of the law, in the eyes of the Human Rights Act, and in terms of, you know, the criminal code. And so I think that's really important. And the public-private sphere is one of the things that I think people need to realize is a blessing, is a great feature of public life in Canada. There is this separation. It's fuzzy. It's levels of gray. I mean, but you have to be prepared to be on a plane or be in a public sphere and have people look at you and try to figure out who you are.
Yeah.
So in my case, I can either be, you know, Colm Feore, or I can be the guy from House of Cards, Doug Stamper, for those of you who are listening. I know. Or I can be Randy Bossino, right? Or sometimes I'm Jean-Yves Duclos, or sometimes I'm Darren Fisher, but Minister Duclos is like a head taller than me. So we all joke that the guys with not very much hair get confused by people. And so as long as you're prepared to understand that being in public life means you're going to be more publicly recognized is one thing. But every one of us decides whether we're going to, you know, have our family members or our spouses or our kids in the public eye. And there is a protocol, maybe that's too strong a word, but a lot of members and a lot of families just decide to have the invisible spouse so that when they get home, that's their sanctuary bubble. And I think that from a self-care perspective, that's really important.
Absolutely.
I can tell you, as a single gay man, that dating's not easy. And I don't even know how to do it.
Well, like, I've really getting confused with Doug Stamper.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's, you know, so that's an issue. But that said, that public-private sphere is important. And I lived in the UK. I saw the difference with the political class, if you will. And so I think the Canadian system is different. It's certainly not what you experience in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so I think I thank the media. I thank, you know, civil society for that sphere of anonymity that we can still preserve here in Canada. Mm-hmm.
Now, thank you so much for chatting. But before we wrap up, to our listeners who may be thinking or umming and ahhing about going into politics, what words or advice would you give to any openly gay or maybe closeted gay folks or trans folks? Because we don't see that many. I think we had one trans person run last year in 2015. What advice would you give to folks who want to run for parliament?
Don't wait. Decide if it's really what you really want to do. Decide what it is you want to change or what you want to do in that level or that order of government. The first key is deciding that you want to do it and that you're prepared to do what it takes to get there in terms of putting in the time and doing the work. Because in politics, nobody hands anything to you. You better go get it because nobody's going to give you anything. And so that means hard work, and it means building a team around you. It means believing in what you can do, the power of one and many to affect change. And then it's the hard work. In the case of becoming a member of parliament, go knock on doors and then go knock on more doors and then go talk to more people and go and do lots of listening. Remember that you have two ears and one mouth, and do lots of listening and really take the pulse of the people you want to represent so that you can have that voice be very clear and inspire people to help you and realize that you're going to ask people to do things for you and on your behalf that you never thought you'd ask other human beings to do because you can't do it all by yourself. So if you're going to go into the public space, understand that you're going to work through and with a lot of other people and be prepared for that and get ready to have lots of gratitude and to be thankful for all the work that they do and to realize that the reason you do it is because when you do have those opportunities, you can do more in 5 minutes in an order of government than you can in 5 or 10 months doing other things. Mm-hmm. Like when we pass a law here or we change regulations here in Ottawa, it affects millions of people at the stroke of a pen. Or when, you know, a majority of people vote yay on a motion, it changes things forever. And that's pretty special. And so that's why I think if we're going to see Canada continue to be accepting of all of our different kinds of diversity, then we need to see representatives of all of our different stripes represented in Parliament. And so my answer is get to work and let us know how we can help because we want to bring people with us on the journey. And there are a lot of really good people that will surround you and support you in your endeavors.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
My pleasure. It was great.
And that was Randy Bosino, the Parliamentary Secretary at the House of Commons under the Liberal government. And what a fantastic conversation that we had with him. I realised somewhat through the conversation that I don't believe I actually introduced Mr. Bosino at the top of that interview. So my apologies for folks who are listening intently and were like, who the heck is this? It is the Parliamentary Secretary. And if you want to get a bit of a flavour about some of the work he does, check out the CPAC's coverage of the second reading for Bill C-16. Some incredible impassioned speech there from Randy Bosino, MP. Now, to round out our conversation, we actually do have Randall Garrison, who is the NDP critic for GLBT issues, and he's just jumping in now.
Thank you so much for taking the time to meet with me to discuss the topic of...
My pleasure to be here. I love radio, especially campus radio.
Excellent. Thank you. We were just saying, actually, that you briefly were at CFUV in Victoria.
Yeah, I did some programs there more than 30 years ago.
Which
is
incredible. And it's amazing how many people have, you know, volunteered briefly at some point with community radio. So it's always great to hear that that folks reach such amazing heights, which I think springboards really nicely off of a conversation that we've had with the other two MPs we interviewed, where we essentially said, you know, how would a youth listening become an MP? And they've all seemed to say, and we'll see whether or not you agree with this, they've all seemed to say, you know, decide what you want to do, and then do who you are and what you want to do and kind of work from there, because, you know, if you want to reflect the community, you need to know who you are before you can kind of work on behalf of those folks.
Well, one of my favorites quotes is from Oscar Wilde, who said, "Be yourself because everyone else is already taken."
Amazing quote.
And I think that's very true. If you want to make change in society, you need to start by being yourself. Be true to yourself mm-hmm. and the things you want to accomplish, and get involved in your community. I never intended to be a member of parliament. I was recruited to run federally, and did so kind of against my better judgment. but a persuasive argument was made by Jack Layton, who was recruiting, that mm-hmm. I was one of the best placed gay men in the country to get elected, and so he pursued me as a candidate relentlessly. And I'm glad he did. I'm very pleased. It's a privilege to be an MP, and in particular to be an out gay MP.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you've been here for at least a couple of terms.
My second term, yeah.
And you did some incredible work last year. I think you tabled C-279.
That was right. That was a bill that I inherited from the work that Bill 6A, mm-hmm. the previous NDP MP for Burnaby Douglas, had done. It had passed the minority parliament, but died a sudden death in the Senate. And so I picked it up. People said, "You're crazy. There's a conservative majority government. You can never get this bill through." Mm-hmm. And we worked very hard. It took 2 years. Mm-hmm. And with the support, I believe it was 18 conservatives in the end voting for the bill, we did get it passed.
Which is incredible.
And it went on to spend 2 years wandering around the corridors of the Senate until it finally died again. Yeah. So that's twice the unelected Senate has killed equal rights for trans Canadians.
Which is shocking. And I think the folks listening to this show, I think we spent all of 2 weeks ago ranting about the sad death that C-279 suffered. And it kind of begs the question of, you know, why is that still happening? Why is there still an opposition to this? And we destroyed some of the arguments of, you know, my favorite, and I don't know if you were there during the Senate hearings, but in the second time we went through, the Conservative members of Senate committee brought in the superintendent for the Ottawa Police Service to essentially argue, you know, the point of worrying about trans folks and peeping toms in the washroom. And my favorite moment was when the superintendent said, you know, if there's a pedophile in the washroom, we'll arrest them under that relevant legislation. We don't need to remove rights.
Well, I think more importantly, the only people who regularly have problems with bathrooms are trans people, who are almost always perceived
Absolutely.
To be in the wrong place and quite often subject to violence. So it's a particularly perverse argument to choose mm-hmm. when it's trans people who have the problem.
And we've seen it work in the opposite way in the States and in the UK, where it's come up, the idea of kicking trans people. It's more often not, it's masculine women and lesbians who've been kicked out of women's washrooms. So it clearly hasn't worked.
Well, yeah, it's a question of prejudice, stereotypes, and fear.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful that this time we're going to move beyond that in this parliament.
Now, we mentioned earlier, and you mentioned in your speech for Rainbow Day, and we'll get to Rainbow Day in just a few moments, the idea that there is still so much left to do. I was talking to somebody recently, and we were talking about how the gay community, the gay male community in particular, needs to kind of not rest on its laurels and think that the fight has been won, we've got marriage, we've got divorce, job done, what's left. But rather that there is still a lot more to kind of fight for. What are some of the things that you think are still left on the table for us?
Well, I guess the thing that peeves me the most is the ban on gay blood donations, since there is no mm-hmm. such thing as gay blood, and that the Canadian Blood Service in, I guess it was 2014, admitted to Libby Davies and I in a meeting that there is mm-hmm. no science behind the ban whatsoever. And so there is no excuse. Especially in a climate where we actually need blood donations, it seems absurd to me that we would continue with this policy based solely on prejudice and fear. Mm-hmm. And it helps to continue the stigmatization of the gay community. And so it must go. And I'm hoping we can get the Liberals to move on this very soon.
Well, they have said that with it dropping down now to 1 year, and with the
which is the approximate equivalent of doing nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of gay men who would not go abstinent for a year. I mean, it might just be the age group.
I know a lot of gay men would say you're not gay if you go more than a year without sex. So I think
license comes up every 6 months. So.
Right, yeah, right. So that's one I think that needs to go. There's some past history we need to deal with, and mm-hmm. one of those we had some success on last week in getting the defense committee.
Where you had a youth from the Rainbow Day come with you.
We had I had two youths shadowing me, and we went to the defense committee, where I moved my motion to ask the Minister of Defense to revise the service records of those who were kicked out of the military before 1992 for being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. There was a real witch hunt that was conducted in the Canadian military. They kept meticulous records, and that's actually a good thing at this point. And issued people dishonorable discharges, which meant they were excluded from the military community, which they've been a part of for many years. It made it hard for them to get jobs. And so the committee voted unanimously to ask the minister to get started on this. Now, the government has not moved, and they say that it takes, they said in very bizarre answer, it takes a whole of government response in the fullness of time. And my, it would be 25 years is certainly the fullness of time, and it doesn't take a whole government to write one letter to the military ombudsman to ask him to commence this work. So yeah. I don't understand why the government is further stalling on this.
How many folks do you think that would impact? Like, how many people are we looking at?
The estimates are somewhere between 800 and 1,200 people who are still living who were kicked out. And you've got to remember that it only stopped in 1992, so some people may have been around 20 years old. They're still be in their 40s. So this is not just really old gays. Yeah. These are people who are still in the workforce and still need to have the stigma of a dishonorable discharge removed from their employment records. So it's a real thing that needs to happen soon.
I think people tend to suffer from almost a short-term memory loss when it comes to the struggle for gay rights, because it was not that long ago that, it was a while ago that homosexuality was outlawed, but it was not that long ago that, you know, marriage was legalized, only 10 years, and some of the other major wins. So I think you're right, we still need to clean up some of the mess from before that happened. And it certainly is an unfinished project that I think needs
a lot of
work. Absolutely. One of the big things in this conversation is, you know, why are there so few? Now, I said, I mistakenly said to Sherry Benson that there were 24 in 2004, and I was corrected by yourself that it was 24 candidates in 2004, and I appreciate the update. But still, I mean, my point I made then remains relevant, because in 2004 there were 24 candidates, in 2015 I think there were 20. So there's still a drop, there's still less candidates being fronted. You know, and we discussed maybe it's the the public not voting them, or is it the political parties not fronting gay candidates?
There's no evidence actually in the US, Canada, or the UK that gay candidates are less successful once they're candidates. Mm-hmm. There's a professor at the University of North Carolina, Andrew Reynolds, who's done a lot of work on this in all three countries, and it's pretty consistent that in fact gay candidates do better than straight candidates. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned to you before, in fact we had only 20 candidates but 6 get elected means our success rate is very, very high.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And as a recovering political scientist, I always point out that parties are the barrier for women, visible minorities, and gays and lesbians. Parties, in their wisdom, decide that the public might not support gay candidates, and therefore it's more difficult to be nominated. Now, the NDP has affirmative action for all kinds of visible minorities, gays and lesbians, and women, people with disabilities, to where nomination races can't be conducted if there's only straight white men as candidates. The NDP requires there be a broader choice before its members to nominate. Mm-hmm. And that's why we do significantly better, I think, both on getting candidates and getting candidates in winnable ridings.
Yeah.
The Liberal Party has no affirmative action measures, and I will give the Conservative Party some credit. They are working quite hard right now under Rona Ambrose to make the Conservative Party more open to gays and lesbians. Mm-hmm. And it's been a surprise, but when there was the pride flag raising on Parliament Hill, the Conservative caucus supported that.
Oh, excellent.
And only half the Conservatives voted against Bill C-16 at second reading, instead of 80% of the Conservative caucus voting against as it was in the previous Parliament. So we are making progress with the Conservatives, who, several have said to me, that they need to stop fighting battles that the Canadian public has already made a decision on, and that is to be more inclusive.
Absolutely. It reminds me of a fantastic cartoon I saw, and it was Halloween-themed, and it was a graveyard with zombies coming out, and they were all labelled with, like, debates that had long since died a painful death, you know, banning the hijab in public and, gay marriage. And it was the idea that, you know, some of these things are coming back up in the conservative conversation, but they've long since been put to rest. I think that's fantastic news. And I think it really shows a major change between the Harper era government, where we saw openly gay MPs go down, or candidates go down to now in the Conservative Party now, which kind of dovetails nicely into the conversation around being openly gay and in Canadian politics at the federal level. Now, I was at an event, a public service pride event, and I saw somebody there, and I think I mentioned this earlier in the show, but I'm like, gosh, I recognize that person. How do I recognize that person? And I nudged the person next to me, and I'm like, you know, who is that that I recognize? And it turns out it was a very senior member of government at the time, and it just, two and two did not come together to make four for me, but you know, the idea that there are people, or there were people known to be gay, but there was a discomfort with making that public. You know, is that something symbolic of just that time period, or is it an issue more wide within Canadian parliamentary politics?
I don't know that I really have an answer to that in general, but I do know that in the previous parliament, quite often it was more a personal and family question than it was a public question. And again, there's been no evidence that it has a negative impact on political careers. So I suspect the one case that everyone always talks about of someone who lived in a glass closet, probably his mother didn't know, and that's why. I don't know the answer to that. I have been an out public figure since 1996. I was the first openly gay man appointed to a police board in British Columbia, and I had to go in and sit down with the police chief and say, out myself to the police chief, I guess, because I was going to be the first one on the board. I said, I just want you to know that my mother already knows. And he said, so do we. They don't call us the police for nothing. And he and I had a great relationship based on that openness. And one of the first things we did, it was a police force that had no women, no visible minorities, and no gays and lesbians.
Wow.
And the first competitions that were done by our board for hirings were done with an exemption of the Human Rights Code, so that we did not consider straight white men for the first four hirings when I was on the board. So for me, it was a lesson that an openly gay person taking a public role could make a difference.
Absolutely.
And after that, I served on city council, and now as an MP, I've been very aware that if I weren't in my position, sometimes things would not get raised, and certainly things wouldn't get done.
Mm-hmm. And I think you've kind of shown that most recently with the committee hearing on dishonorable discharge that we mentioned just a little earlier. That makes me think of, you know, it's so important to have examples, out public examples. And I think it was, I want to say, Alan Cumming, the famous actor, recently said that he was very disappointed in himself for not having come out sooner, that he felt that, you know, having seen emails and letters from his fans, that he missed an opportunity of leadership by not being out sooner. Do you feel that being out, you kind of provide an example to folks?
I hope so. We're short on LGBT candidates and people in public life, and I hope that it says to people this can be done. And not only that it can be done, but it should be done. Mm-hmm. That people do need to step forward. And a lot of times I say to people, you know, we're still about 26 short members of parliament, so step forward.
Absolutely.
Because we're not going to get there unless people do grab the ring and get themselves elected.
Now, what words of advice would you give to LGBT folks who are thinking, maybe I should go and try and go into parliament? And this is a question I've asked everybody so far, all of half of the opening KAMPs, which is three. But yes, now what would you say to kind of get somebody galvanized to believe in themselves enough to
do this? First of all, you have to be involved in your community, and you have to have issues you care about. You can't just decide you want to be a member of parliament. That doesn't work too well. I think I'm a good example of somebody who didn't have this as an intention. This is not the way I intended my life to go, and it's certainly not the way my partner intended our life to go. So get to work in your community, be who you are, step forward, take leadership roles, and out of that we'll see people emerge who can run for parliament and get themselves elected.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and kind of explore this issue a little bit, and hopefully in 2019, I was doing the math inside my head then, we'll see a much higher percentage of folks running, and maybe if we repeat this in 4 years, we'll have a lot more than three interviews to speak
I'm
to.
Sure you will.
Excellent.
Thanks
Thank
very
much.
Hello and welcome back to us folks here in the studio. That was the interview with Randall Carlson, MP, and hopefully that gives everybody a bit of an insight into the Canadian context. Now, I am going to warn folks that in our next episode, we will be looking at the impact that Donald Trump presidency has already had. And for those faint of heart, it has been a very serious impact. We have reports of already today, we've heard reports up to 8 trans folks who have taken their lives, blaming the hopelessness of fearing being under a Trump government. So it's well, there certainly will be plenty to talk about. It's not all doom and gloom. There was some good news to come out of the election in the States. And we'll be doing that conversation in great detail. Anyway, we're playing out for the show, and I want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen. We're the Tribe Called Red, featuring Black Bear, and this is their track, Stadium Powwow. It's a great, great track, and from an amazing artists. And that's all for us for now, and we'll be back with a bit of a US take next time on the Velvet Studio.